Okay, I think we can start. I was in a party yesterday, so I don't expect more people. Now I remember what happens. So, okay, welcome everyone. I will talk a little about game development in HTML5 today. So let me first of all introduce myself. My name is Michał Budzyński. I work for Mozilla as a Firefox OS developer. So I'm in here more like an undercover spy on this conference. I live in Paris now, where I eat snails and frogs and other French things. But I'm from Warsaw in Central Europe, from the capital of Poland. And I organized On Game Start. That's the first large-scale HTML5 gaming conference. We already had three editions. First one in 2011 in Warsaw, the second one in Warsaw as well, a year after that, and the third one was this year in March in New York. And I love to do stupid things for the web, like, yeah, I will talk about this one later, but I'm addicted to all the TV shows, okay, most of the TV shows. So I run a GitHub repository with the list of all my shows. So if you want to, like, if you watched some show that I didn't, you can fork my repo and send me a pull request with that. I will show you the address later. Okay, but let's talk about games. So people often think that HTML5 gaming is something quite new, like, but because we have this HTML5 hype for like 3 years so far, maybe not even 3 years. But that's actually not true, so let's talk about a little bit about the history. So JavaScript itself was created in like 1996, 1997, somewhere around that. And the first games were made just after the JavaScript was created by a guy, that's the oldest one I could find online. The guy called Scott Porter from UK, and he ported a lot of old, like, Nintendo arcade games and things like that. His site, smashcat.org, was made in, like, 2001 or 2002, and it still makes, like, really good impression even today. So after that, in around 2000, we had the HTML era. Like, that was the big revolution in web development because why? You know what DHTML means? Your site is DHTML when you try to run it in Internet Explorer and it doesn't want let you to do that. So that's the easy way to, you know, check if your site is DHTML or not. And so after that during this period, we had a lot of games created, you know, mostly using DOM elements, so like this DHTML lemmings. Every lemming is just an animated GIF moved with absolute position and moved all over the canvas and things like that. Or, Mario written in 14 kilobytes, also using images and absolute positioning of divs, things like that. But after this, around 2005, we had another big revolution in web technologies called Ajax. And Ajax, like, the previous revolution means completely nothing. Like, Ajax, you know what Ajax stands for? Asynchronous JavaScript and JSON, exactly. Like, just like P in LAMP stays for Ruby, right? And so we had the browsers changed a little. So we had, like, Canvas element introduced. and a couple of guys from Netherlands ported old Sierra games like King Quest and Police Quest, and you can play them now online multiplayer, so you can see all other players playing around at the same time. You cannot interact with them, but you can see them, so that's quite nice. Or guys from Norway ported Civilization to Canvas as well. Unfortunately, the project is shut down now because of some low and things like that. Okay, but after this, we had another big milestone in web history called HTML5, and that term means completely nothing, like all the terms before that, because it's just an umbrella term for, you know, new JavaScript APIs, new HTML elements and things like that. But it works. Like when I wrote my first game tutorial for HTML5 on my blog, I called it JavaScript game tutorial, and I have like not even 100 entries from Google, and I changed it to HTML5 game tutorial, and I have around 900 every day now. So yeah, the marketing works. So what is this HTML5 thing about? We have a lot of different terms inside this one big umbrella term in there, and I will talk a little bit about them. So first of all, Canvas. Canvas was developed in Apple for creating widgets for their operating system, but now it's part of HTML standard. So it's a simple two-dimensional drawing API. So, yeah. Example. That's, as I said, I organized a gaming conference. So, you know, I didn't want it to run like a regular site because it's boring. So we made game instead of site. So you just control the astronaut inside the spaceship, and you're just look for. Okay, you can. You need to avoid lasers. Oh, come on. And if you will find a speaker like this one, you can talk to him, and he will introduce himself and say what he will talk about in the conference. Yeah, things like that. So that's a simple drawing API, just basics, right? Nothing more to say. You can just draw images like or primitives like rectangles, whatever. Yeah, but what about 3D graphics in the two-dimensional world? So there are a couple of projects on porting three-dimensional engines to two-dimensional canvas. So that's actually still two-dimensional thing. But so we draw 3D using 2D API, more or less. It makes sense. Oh, wait a little. Yeah, so that's the simple model renderer with Earth and Sun and stupid things like that, but there is a nice one somewhere here. Oh, that's Wolfenstein, yeah. So that's just two-dimensional canvas with ray tracing and things like that. Yeah, but that was how it looks like a couple of years ago when we didn't have 3D in our browsers. So after that, another interesting thing is our WebSockets. So finally, we can make a multiplayer game that connects your players and allows them to play together without, you know, polling the server all the time. But you can just open a socket and listen to what's happening on the other side. And my favorite example is a Russian port of Bomberman. It's called Bombermine. And it's massive multiplayer Bomberman. So you just play with other players. There is 102 players now on the screen, and I'm like in the middle in here. Okay, and I was killed. And it uses WebSockets and 2D canvas as well, and yeah, every single like character on the screen that's other player. So what methods of communicating with server do we have? So first of all is simple XML HTTP request, right? So that everyone probably knows what's that. Long polling, that is same kind of request, but you don't send the last part of the request. Server is not closing the connection. JSON peopling's more or less same thing, but with cross-origin forever iframes that we don't use it anymore. And Flash sockets, yeah, we don't want to use Flash if we are HTML developers. And we have web sockets. So we have quite a lot of different ways to communicate with server. So, but we don't need to care about all of them because there are actually libraries that helps us with that. So those libraries just detect what kind of connection your browser supports and fall back to other solutions. So yeah, using the same API, you can you don't need to worry on what kind of browser your user use. And but okay, I'm client side developer, so I don't really want to have anything in common with the server side. So is it possible to run to write a multiplayer game without doing anything on the server side? Unfortunately, we cannot use those libraries to do that. But there are a lot of services that helps you with this, like Pusher. So Pusher sends your data and broadcasts it to wherever you want. They have their own API with, and it's really easy to use. Like, and you can use Pusher for a couple of weeks for free. But that's still a server. But we just don't need to care about it. But we have something called WebRTC. So that's the new standard that Mozilla is working on together with Google. And WebRTC is peer-to-peer browser connection and all the APIs around. So you can access your browser's microphone or your webcam, whatever. And so it will be in the near future possible to write like Skype-like thing just in the browser without any plugin. And I want to show one example of that. Okay. As I said, I really like to do stupid things online, and sometimes I have too much time. So that's my puzzle game, using your webcam. So you just need to grab a... Okay, not in here. Yeah. To grab a piece. Oh, that's quite easy in here. Now, okay, you can cheat like this. And yay. Yeah, so that's WebRTC, part of WebRTC API. You can use your webcam without any plugins and without anything else. I have a lot of time. Okay, so I will show you another example from that. Because last week I made a talk about face recognition in JavaScript. I'm not sure if those examples still works because I updated my Chrome browser. Okay, so that's, we start streaming our camera to the canvas and draw it in here, and we stop streaming when we detect the face on the screen. That's the first step. The second step is like, okay, so we have a texture for 3D model, and we put the face that we detect inside the head's texture. And the third part is putting this... Oh, come on. Oh, yeah. So I have a model of me. That's my player now. It detects... So the algorithm detects where the eyes are and where the nose is and puts it's like, so it looks more or less, you know, it makes a little bit sense. So that was the prototype of our game. Well, that was the prototype of our new game for On Game Start New York, the one that was in March. But unfortunately, it didn't actually work like expected. But I will show it after that. So yeah, that's WebRTC. Another thing I want to talk about is CSS. So we usually use CSS for changing colors of the background or positioning elements. So it's kind of boring, right? What CSS has in common with games? So the first and one of my favorite part is CSS animations. So you can create an animation like a Lego block. And so yeah, that's actually a sprite animation. So that's why we used hack like Do I have a laser in here or anything like that? Oh, I don't think so. Okay, so, and we don't want to sprites to just be translated. You know, we need steps. Every frame is a step. That's why we use 24.99. That's from 0 to 24.99. That's the one frame, because it has the same value in there. And then we switch to another frame just in the 0.01% of the time. Yeah, more or less, things like that. So I will show the example. Yeah, that's my favorite thing. Actually, that's why I work at Mozilla. They hired me after doing this demo. You know Nyancat? You don't know what's that? Really? Really? Okay, whatever. So that's the CSS-only Nyancat version. So, like, I don't use any graphics in here. Like, mouth is just a rotated E letter. This rainbow is a gradient. And every star contains, like, nine divs with white background. And I don't use any JavaScript in here as well, because it's all animated with CSS animations. Yeah, so it's, as I wrote in here, it's 81 DOM elements and almost 700 lines of CSS. But it was worth it. Yeah. But, okay, that's just a stupid demo. So what about, like, more clever things in CSS? Oh, no. No, not now. That will be a second stupid demo. So we do have a 3D transformation in CSS now. So we can do cool stuff like that. How cool is that, right? And wait for it. Now every div that was used in this has a white border. So, yeah, it's really a lot of elements. But yeah, it's also without any JavaScript or... It's just pure CSS and HTML. But is it possible to write a program in CSS? And actually, I never thought that it is, but CSS is Turing complete. And there is one example I found. It's called 101 something. So the input is in the first row, and the output of the center cell of, okay, maybe I will show them. Okay, I don't know where I have it. Okay, you just need to believe me that it works. So, yeah, there is a GitHub address of the repo and the guy who creates that, and it explained over there. But, okay, that's just a boring thing. What about games in pure CSS? Is it possible? So the first example I ever found was a Tower of Hanoi. That's, you know, the game? You need to take let's say, bricks or whatever, and put them from the first stick to the last stick, but you can only put smaller one on the biggest one, right? More or less. So, yeah, so that's how it works. So you can... Oh, it's very small. Okay, I destroyed the surprise, because the idea is that you can do whatever you need to, but... And it's just CSS without any JavaScript, but it has all the states that are possible pre-rendered in here, and it just scrolls the div to the given position when you click on the arrow, and you can see it in here in the address bar. So that's not actually a game, it's just a div with thing. Oh, maybe I will show that. So that's how the game looks like. Okay, thanks. But what about real games? So there are a couple of Japanese guys that actually made real CSS games without any JavaScript or anything like that. Wow. Okay. And that's my favorite. You just click on the alligators or crocodiles. I have no idea what the difference is. And there are points at the top and time on the bottom. And okay. So this game was written using zero lines of JavaScript code, 46 lines of HTML, and 6,387 lines of CSS. So, yeah, you never want to do that, but it's possible. The idea is that every single alligator or crocodile is just a checkbox. So if you click on it, it changes the rules of everything in the game. So then the point indicator is updating and things like that. That's not actually how you should write games in for the browser, but it's possible. And that's not the most sick example, because there's a guy also who ported some FTP. Where do I have that? Okay. So that's... That's the 3D engine, well, written only in CSS. Okay, the controls are in JavaScript, because CSS have no input, but everything is rendered. Like, every single wall is just a div or something like that. So you can inspect that in browser and inspector. Okay, maybe not in Chrome, I'm not sure. Yeah. But that's just cheating, and that's not how we should write games, because we do have WebGL now. And WebGL is a 3D context of Canvas. It has similar API similar to OpenGL, shader support, and a lot of different things. So I showed you our previous on-game start site and the model things together with face detection. So that's how the site for the event in March looks like. You control the astronaut. The idea is the same. Like, you control the astronaut on the planet and try to look for speakers. I have no idea where are they. Okay, but that's my favorite part. You can jump in here. And every star has its own gravity. Okay, it doesn't work really good now because I have a lot of different stuff opened. Oh, there is a guy there. Ah, okay, I was killed. Whatever. So, yeah, you can still play it on ongamestart.us. And we have, finally, we had also some tools, not only games. So the guys from London started a startup called Play Canvas, and that's like WebGL 3D editor for games, and they made a clone of Counter-Strike, so it's a multiplayer game with 3D, and so it supports WebSocket for and Node.js for communication, and WebGL for rendering. It also supports the GamePad API, so you can control with your GamePad. Unfortunately, I don't have one, and it's too big, too loud now. Okay, I don't think we have time for that. You need to believe me that it works. So we have really a lot of game engines and game frameworks already. Some of them are commercial, some of them are open sourced. In some of them, you don't even need to know how to write JavaScript to code your game, like Construct 2. There is a whole list on GitHub with every engine that is available on market with description and things like that. But still, you need to write JavaScript for doing HTML5 games. And not everyone likes writing JavaScript code, right? So that was the main, let's say, problem for my 5 means really 5 or... Okay, so we have a subset of JavaScript language called ASM.js, and it's like JavaScript but with strong typing and things like that. It's run by Mozilla, and it's already loaded in Firefox nightly. And there is a great demo of Unreal Engine written in ASM.js. I'm not sure if we do have time for that, actually. but okay, so it will be loading. But you don't actually need to write JavaScript to write HTML5 games. Like the Rovio a couple of years ago ported their Android Angry Birds using Google Web Toolkits, yeah, to HTML5. So the final product was HTML5. We have something called MScripten, so you can compile your LLVM code that you can create. You can compile your, for example, C++ code to LLVM and then cross-compile it to JavaScript, like Banana Bread. That's the another Mozilla demo with. Oh, it works. This ISMJS thing. It doesn't work really good now here, but it works. Yeah, that's. So that's the WebGL game written in ISMJS. Okay, but whatever. Ah! No! Why? Not really. Yeah, so it's like Quake or something like Quake-like game, also multiplayer, so you have a lot of weapons, bots, and maps and whatever. And it's written in C and compiled to JavaScript using MScripten. Come on. Oh, and it used full screen API as well. Yeah. Usually there are some enemies in here, but okay, maybe I did something wrong. But yeah, it works smoothly and it's like a playable game, so it's. So yes, you don't even need to write JavaScript to have a JavaScript game. So what about, we are in a mobile conference, so I will say like a couple of sentences about mobile web. So we have really a lot of mobile devices everywhere. And yesterday, who was on the keynote yesterday? There was a guy who said that we have like around 7 billion people and we have around 4 billions of mobile phones, and we don't even have as many toilets as mobile phones, right? But that's, okay, that's not really surprising because a lot of people can use one toilet, but the surprising thing, not in the same time, but but it's even possible, I think. But whatever. I was surprised that actually only 3.5 billion have a toothbrush. That's surprising. So, yeah, and really, that is real statistics. Like, I mean, I saw that somewhere on TED conference last year or something like that. I didn't create it today. So, yeah, the first phone that allows you to write native, like JavaScript applications as native was Palm, but we all know that Palm is dead now and no one used that. I think that no one used it ever. So the main problem back in the years, like when I started doing JavaScript gaming for mobiles around 2010 or 9, 10, was that we have really a lot of mobile systems. Like we used to, you need to write Objective-C to write an Apple iPhone app, or Java for Android and BlackBerry. They had JavaScript for WebOS, Migo, Symbian, and Bada. That was C and yeah, whatever. And so we had a solution for that, and we had a lot of frameworks that helps you to bring your JavaScript code as a native application. So you could, it just more or less the idea was that it creates a web view and with a Chromeless web view and put your document inside, which wasn't working really good. But you had access to all the phone features like that you could not access from the browser. But then Dominik Szablewski, 2 minutes. one guy who creates the Impact.js engine, he wrote the first, I think that was the first time when he actually wrote the cross-compiler from native, from JavaScript Canvas to native OpenGL ES. So if you write your game and you use Canvas API, it just cross-compile it and use it as a, and draw it as a native API. And after that, AppMobi did this as well, and I think it's Intel bought AppMobi like a couple of months ago, and guys from Lude, they were in here yesterday and the day before, so you probably already know their product. And I have no idea why do I have this slide in here, so forget about it. And a little bit of summary. So, yeah, even the biggest Flash games portals like Kongregate or Spiel Games is not a site, but it's like the company that has a lot of sites, they start publishing HTML5 gaming now, and they did only Flash before. We had Firefox OS and Tizen and probably a lot of other mobile systems in the near future that supports HTML5 as the first language. And we have Ouya also. I have no idea how to pronounce it correctly, but that's the, you know what's that? Anyone? Okay, so that's the Android Android gaming console. It costs like $100, and you can play only Android games in here. So, using those tools I showed before, like Lude or AppMobi, you can run your HTML5 apps in here as well. So, HTML5 is the future. Deal with it. Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. I really need to smoke. But I have some On Game Start t-shirts. Anyone wants? No one had a question, right? But now everyone wants a t-shirt.
I got a question.
Of course, it's always like that.
So, yeah, HTML5 is the future, but right now it's, most of the games are still developed in native language, right? So from your perspective, what should be improved most to help more game developers to move to HTML5?
But as I said, you don't need to move to HTML5. You can write your game in C or in Java or whatever and compile to, you know, to JavaScript. JavaScript is a new assembler, you know? Like, it's, we have so many languages that compiles to JavaScript that you don't even need to write a single line of JavaScript code to have a, like, HTML5 game as a final product. So we don't force you to write JavaScript if you don't like it, but you still can do HTML5 games. I'm not sure if I answered your question, actually. But
well,
that's one option. Yeah. So, yeah, we definitely need more tools. Like, we don't have a lot of tools now, but I'm not really good at throwing, but yeah. Okay.
My question is, so WebRTC, it seems very practical for peer-to-peer communications, and Node.js is quite good for peer-to-server. Is there some standardized web API? Because Node.js is not a standard that takes the place of WebRTC for client-server communications.
But what I don't think I understand. Like, there is a lot of ways to communicate browser with a server, but Node.js is just a framework that's, you know... Can you explain?
Yeah,
a bit
okay.
More to
I've thought of using WebSockets for some projects, which depends on a protocol like IRC or so. It seems it doesn't. It's not the preferred way to do it. I guess that's. But I don't see WebSocket? That there is one. Yeah.
So WebSocket it is part of the standard, but there are some. There were some, a couple of years ago, security issues with that. But as far as I know, everything is solved, and that's the best way to do it. In my personal project, I use WebSockets. So I think that's the easiest and the best way to do that. But, yeah. Okay, so who wanted the t-shirt? Okay, I have three. But those are L. But it's, I think it's American L, so bigger.
Michal, may I have one more question?
Sure.
May I have one more question? Because you said about those cross-compiled things, and I was wondering, what's the performance when you, well, for example, write your application in C++, use some cross-compiling into JavaScript? Isn't it better to write it directly in JavaScript because of the performance?
No. Actually, no, because these cross-compilers know exactly how the JIT just-in-time compiler behaves. So they know what kind of patterns to avoid and how to write your code to be faster and more
optimized.
So what's
the point in writing JavaScript games in JavaScript?
One more time.
So what's the point in writing JavaScript
okay, the
games
for me,
in
JavaScript? For me, the point is that I don't know how to write games in C.
Okay, so basically, for any other developers, you would rather recommend to stay with their own native like language, yeah, and then use cross-compiling. And
sure, okay. Why not?
Don't you think that this is this doesn't encourage just to go into the web and to play around?
Yeah,
with
we
the web?
But it never work, you know. So why I need to lie to people if I don't need to? Right? If you are a C developer, write your C games and compile them to JavaScript. I still have an HTML5 game to show during my talks on the conferences, and you still write your C code, right? So everyone is happy. Win-win.
Okay, sure. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay, I have one for you. And who wants the second one? Okay. As I said, I'm not really good at drawing. That's why I'm making games for people and not playing like baseball or things. Okay.
Fight!
Okay, thanks.
Was a thief of my heart so long.
keep chasing like a rooster everything you lay eyes on. So
calls me, trouble down the waterfront. You know I try to, now I'm running out of lies. It's a clear view when all your eyes getting paid. No more favors, I know what we can do about it. I think I better run. I think I better.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Sweet. Well, welcome to our Project Anarchy presentation. I'm Ryan Monday. I'm the Community and Technical Art Director of Havoc.
And I'm Joel Van Enwick. I'm a Field Application Engineer at Havoc, also Evangelist for Havoc.
All right. So let's get started. How many here are actually currently in game development? All right. Perfect. And how many are interested in getting into it? Awesome, awesome. So Project Anarchy, kind of just to start, is a completely free mobile development engine. So to get started, we want to talk a little bit about Havoc for those of you that don't know what the Havoc name is. We've been in business for the past 13 years as a middleware industry leader. We've been known as the bleeding edge technology for physics. We've also had a regular release schedule, and we make our roadmaps very transparent, which is important for the future of development if you pick up our products. Also, we're fully cross-platform. All our products are supported pretty much across all the platforms with our recent addition of Tizen. We're in over 500 shipped titles, and we're currently supporting 100 games in development. Also, Havoc was founded in Dublin, Ireland, and now we have offices all over the world. Now, this is important because we're able to support people in all the different regions, and Joel and I are in the San Fran office, so...
just a few blocks away.
So now into Project Anarchy, kind of the introduction. We're going to go over what Project Anarchy exactly is, why we're giving it away for free, what do you get with it, and then show you some demos in the engine.
So a quick introduction. Wait, do you want to go?
Kind of Project Anarchy, as we said, is a complete end-to-end mobile game development engine. So we're giving it away for free on iOS, Android, and now Tizen. Basically, Project Anarchy is our Havoc Vision engine wrapped in with Havoc Physics, Havoc AI, Havoc Animation, and we're also throwing in FMod for sound development, completely free.
All right, so a quick introduction, as Ryan already mentioned. It's available for free for Android, iOS, and Tizen for mobile development and deployment. And we do mean free here. No matter how much money you make off of it, it's still going to be free to deploy on all of those platforms. So this engine is actually completely C++ based, and you can create plugins and create your runtime code completely in C++. But we understand that a lot of people don't do C++, so that's why we also provide Lua scripting so that you can do rapid prototyping. In fact, you can create an entire game. We actually include a block tower game that's done entirely with Lua. So you can create a complete game with runtime logic all inside of Lua, and we also include an integrated debugger so you can set breakpoints, have watch windows, everything entirely built in. And we have an online community that we're going to be supporting. I mean, Ryan and myself and some of the other members of our team will be helping on the forums, but we'll also have an area for you to ask questions and get those questions answered. And we'll also have an ideas place because we want to get the community's feedback on what they want for the future. And what we're going to be doing is really taking a close look at what people want and hopefully integrate that back into the product as quickly as possible. And we're also going to be providing comprehensive documentation, game samples, and tutorials. The RPG demo, which we're going to be showing in a bit, we're actually going to be providing full source code for that. And all of the source assets created in Maya and 3ds Max will be provided completely for free. And we'll be providing tutorials, not just text tutorials, but also video tutorials. And we'll be providing courseware, over 5 hours of courseware on launch, so that people can go from not knowing anything about Project Anarchy to being well-versed in all of the tools that we have. And if you want, there will be also upgrades available for additional platforms. Say you create an amazing game that does really well on mobile platforms, and then you want to take it to, like, PSN, maybe to 360. We provide an upgrade path for that as well. And as we said before, Havoc is really well known for being very good at cross-platform development. So the idea is once you create your mobile platform, mobile targeted game, upgrading to additional platforms should be very easy. And if you want more source code, what we do provide a lot of source code with Project Anarchy, but we also provide, if you wanted to, a path so that you can get even more of the source code available to you. And of course, we also provide professional support. So we will be providing support on the forums, and hopefully the community will be able to support you as well. But if you need dedicated professional support from all the regions around the world so that you can have, you know, time-sensitive responses to all your questions, you can get that as well.
All right, so now let's go in. Why is it free? That's probably our most frequently asked question. First point is we wanted to power indie developers with our tool set. Our biggest complaint is that our tools are awesome, but not affordable to the average developer. So this kind of solves this. By being able to give this package away for free, you're able to use our full tool set. Next was to allow students with education. Looking at, you know, current products on the market, it either had great art tools but not a lot of source code access, or a ton of source code access and not a lot of art tools. So this was kind of our solution to provide both to the educational community. And the last part is this is part of an initiative from our parent company, Intel. As you've seen from this conference so far, Intel has been extremely dedicated to and committed to making sure that cross-mobile development is happening.
All right, so let's jump into the individual products that we provide. And the first one is kind of the overarching piece that is the game engine piece that includes your runtime logic, your rendering system, your sound integration, all that, and including our level editor. So Havok Vision Engine is a versatile component-based C++ API that allows you to create your game engine. And it's the component-based, we're going to come back to this quite a few times. The component-based is important because say you already have been doing a lot of C++ development and you have pieces that you may want to reuse inside of Vision, it's very easy to plug those components in without having to work with some sort of monolithic engine that may be really hard to replace the animation system or replace the render engine. For us, it's very, very easy to do that. And we include a full WYSIWYG level editor we call VForge, and you can actually play your game directly inside of the level editor. And we have a full asset management system as well. So we're going to have iOS, as we said, iOS, Tizen, and Android. And when you're working with cross-platform development, one of the big issues that you run into is your textures may be a different format for Android versus iOS, or maybe on Android you want to use lower resolution textures. Well, with our asset management system, we make that really easy. So you can override certain assets or models for particular platforms, and it automatically transforms them for those particular platforms. And we have a very flexible plugin framework. And this part is important because this is not just for the runtime side that you actually run on your device, but also as far as the level editor goes. Our level editor is made in C#, and you can easily create plugins and extensions and new panels for the editor as well. And the plugins and samples that we are providing for Vision are actually shipped with full source. So the different component integrations that we have for physics, AI, and Animation Studio, we're providing those plugins for VForge completely with full source. So maybe you have your own third-party tools that you use. If we don't already have integrations for that, it's very easy for you to go in and create those plugins yourself and extend the editor if you need to. And we provide some good samples so that makes it easy. And fast iteration. Fast iteration is really important to us. Over the last year or so, we've been spending a lot of effort to try to make iterating on target platforms a lot easier. So one of these things is actually our remote input, so that any accelerometer or touchscreen from your device will actually get transmitted directly into the editor, so you can test out your input inside the editor without actually having to deploy it to the target platform. But we also have a file serve, which allows you to directly send new textures or models to the device. So you don't have to rerun your application or reload everything. It directly streams the new textures you have directly to the device. So it makes editing a lot faster. And we also have multiple user editing. And what this means is we have a layer-based approach inside of VForge, so you can separate your scene into things like lights, cameras, and so on, and then each artist can lock or edit individual layers without influencing those other layers. And we have full Perforce integration as well, so you can check out files and lock files so that other people don't simultaneously edit the files that someone else is editing, resulting in conflicts. So with teams of 20, 50, even 100 people, it's extremely easy for a lot of collaborative development. Havok Physics. I think Havok Physics should be known to most of you guys. We've been doing this the most. We're well known for our physics system. We've been used in over 400 ship titles, everywhere from Halo, Assassin's Creed, Uncharted, Skyrim. All of these have been using our physics. So it's a battle-tested physics system. So in here we have a very robust rigid body dynamic system and constraints, and all of this is multi-threaded. This may seem not very important to mobile developers, but we're getting to the point where there's 2 cores, 4 cores, even 8 cores on mobile devices. So being able to have multi-threaded simulation on these devices is actually really important. And we've spent a lot of effort using things like simulation islands and different techniques to make it so that it actually separates across the cores really well. And we allow for fast asynchronous ray casts and linear casts. And this is important for things everywhere from doing AI deployment to maybe character movement and stuff like that. So being able to put raycast and linearcast in separate threads is actually really important. And they're really, really fast. And we have extensions included with our physics system, such as character controllers. So we provide a very easy way for you to just say, create a character controller. You want to interact with the environment in a realistic way. We allow you to do that. And we allow you to walk upstairs, climb up ladders. All of that's built in. So we actually provide a simple state machine so that you can do that. And a complete vehicle kit, too. So without much work at all, you can drop a vehicle into your game and start interacting with the environment. And there's a lot of tweakability there as well. And we provide a visual debugger that we call the VDB. And frankly, physics and a lot of these components that we create are complex beasts. And there are certain cases where you might run into performance problems or something's going on that you don't completely understand. We provide a tool, an external tool, that allows you to actually connect not just to the game running on your PC, but actually remotely connect to the game running on your device. So you can see profiling counters, you can see, you know, the bounding boxes for things, the simulation islands, everything directly on the device. So it's really fast to see exactly what's going on. You can even take captures and send it to the support team to see what exactly is going on. So it's a really powerful tool. Now switching over to Havok AI. Havok AI, kind of a misleading name a little bit. It's a full-featured pathfinding solution. And it doesn't just mean 2D, how do I get from point A to point B on a 2D surface. We also include 3D nav volumes, so if your characters can fly or go through water, we allow you to have a 3D nav mesh so that your characters and even NPCs can navigate through those surfaces. And we also provide wall climbing as well. So what's really great is how fast our nav mesh generation is. Traditionally, a lot of people would create the nav mesh from scratch. An artist would create the render geometry, and then a designer or some poor soul would have to go through and manually create the nav mesh. Well, what we do is we take the render mesh that the artists create, take that input geometry, and automatically create an optimized nav mesh that has less surfaces that perfectly represents the navigable area. And we also allow you to dynamically update these nav meshes at runtime. So even though that's a tool-side thing where you take the render geometry and convert it to a nav mesh that's something that you can A-star pathfind on, we allow you to update that nav mesh too. Say, for example, maybe in gameplay, a boulder falls down and then a path is blocked. You can automatically, at runtime, update that nav mesh so that the NPCs will now route around that boulder. And we actually have a built-in connection between our AI system and our physics system, so you don't have to handle any of that yourself. It will automatically connect any physics objects and update the nav mesh at runtime for you. We also provide local steering. And local steering is a way for you to path around characters. So in this simple example here, we have a lot of characters, and they're all pathfinding to go across the other direction, and they navigate around each other in a realistic way. So this is a way for you to do maybe crowd simulation in some way, or just NPCs walking through an environment. You want it to look semi-realistic without having to spend a lot of time. So it's very performant. It's also multi-threaded. And finally, our Havok Animation Studio. So Havok Animation Studio is actually two components, Havok Animation and the Animation Studio, which is a full WYSIWYG toolset. So in the animation side, this includes a very optimized animation blending system, which has actually been optimized per platform. So we have SIMD optimizations, a lot of multi-threaded optimizations. And we also includes advanced compression algorithms. Once you start doing a lot of animations, you realize that your memory budget starts to get really, really big, and it starts to be a real problem. So we provide three different kinds of compression algorithms so that even if you have hundreds, maybe even thousands of animations, you can compress that down in such a way that you can deploy it easily onto even mobile devices. Because as we all know, the over-the-air size is really, really important for mobile developers, and that's important for us too. So we want to make sure that you can get as many animations as you can onto your mobile devices. And finally, what Animation Studio provides is a graphical authoring tool for you to create basically an animation blend tree. So you can go from, say, a walking state to a running state to a fighting state, and it represents it in a really easy visual way. And this includes other tools, for example, like blending between ragdolls. So maybe you're in a run animation and then you get hit and you die and you want to blend into a ragdoll state. It's very easy to set that up visually inside of our tool. So you can blend it into a ragdoll state. Animation syncing is saying things like going from a walking state to a running state. One of the big problems is you get a lot of foot sliding. Well, we provide ways called sync points so that you can, when you're going from walking to running, the foot actually plants down. So when you're blending between different animations, you don't get foot sliding. And finally, we have things like foot IK. So if you're walking upstairs, for example, the foot actually plants on the stairs instead of just clipping through in a really ugly way. So what we really want to do with these tools, I mean, these have been used in AAA games for a really long time now, like we said with Skyrim. We want to have this AAA tools used in the mobile space. We want better and better games to be created for mobile. So let's actually take a look at this in a bit here. But again, our WYSIWYG level editor is VForge, and this is where you would create your scenes, do the remote input and file serving, where you can actually deploy in real time your assets to your mobile devices. And the visual debugging, which I mentioned a second ago. And that's not just for physics, but it's also for our animation studio and our AI system. So let's actually switch this over to VForge, and I'll show you some of this in action. So here, you saw a screenshot of this a second ago. This is VForge, which is our level editor here. And on the bottom left here is actually the layers that I mentioned before. And this is what we use to make it so that it's easy to do multi-user editing. So this actually directly connects to Perforce, and I can right-click on a particular layer and say lock, and then that actually does a Perforce checkout and lock so that other people can't edit this particular layer. And it still is important for you to organize this in a kind of understandable way. You want to have maybe a lights layer so that someone who's just doing lights can work on it. Maybe there's a nav mesh generation layer. Maybe you have actors in one layer and so on. So you still need to separate it in a realistic way, but we provide the utilities to make that easy for you. So the coolest part for this is iteration time. And what I mentioned a second ago, you can actually play this game directly inside the editor. We'll actually show this on the device in a second as well. So this is exactly the same C++ code that would be running on your device as well. It's a C++ plugin that works directly inside of the editor. So it's not like you have to maintain two separate code bases, one that works in the editor and one that works on the device. They actually work in conjunction with each other. So this is actually showing off not just our AI system, but the particles that we have to offer. And if I actually let this guy, I'm just going to... So we also have full particle system, and that guy actually blended into a ragdoll state as well. So this is showing everything from AI, Animation Studio, and our physics system all in one package. And again, this demo that you're seeing here, including all of the source assets, the models, the animations, everything is included completely for free, and all the source code is included as well. So let me actually exit out of this and just quickly show you some of the things we can do. A second ago, I mentioned the asset management system. Let me go ahead and exit that here. So this is the asset browser, which is one component of our asset management system. Let me actually make this thumbnail a little bit bigger here. And this is actually showing all the types, all the assets that are available to us inside this particular project. So you can see there's a lot of things here. And this separates into things like textures, static meshes, models, prefabs, and so on. And I can do individual filters on this just to see the things that I care about. And prefabs, I kind of didn't mention this at all. Prefabs are a way for you to combine different assets into one group. For example, you might have a torch, and a torch may have a light on it, a particle system, and a mesh. You can combine those things into a prefab and then instance that all over the place, which will save memory and time so an artist can create, this is my torch, and this is how I want it to look everywhere in the level. Makes it very easy. So actually, let me go ahead and show you how to create a level really quick here. So let's say I want to drag and drop a, create a pillar inside of the scene. It's really simple. I can search for pillar, filter this out, then I can just drag and drop this into the scene, and it actually snaps it to the ground as well. So I'll actually cast it down so that it fits onto whatever level surface that you have. So I can just do this really easily. And another thing that I want to show off here is being able to, the component-based thing that I mentioned before. So let's, for example, let me go ahead and search for a boulder here. So let me drag and drop this guy in here. And let me come over here. Just move this into a little bit better space here. Kind of in the sky for no real good reason. And then I'm going to go ahead and run this in the editor. You see that it just hangs out in the sky. Well, what if I want this boulder to actually interact with this world that I have, which seems like a logical thing I may want to do. So let me go ahead and select this folder, and we have this components panel here, and these are all the different components, or you can consider them attributes or behaviors that you might want to attach onto a particular entity in the world. So in this case, I'm going to attach a Havok rigid body to this. So I just double-click on this, and it creates a new component for this particular entity. And just like that, if I press play, that boulder now interacts with the world. And this, in the same way, you can attach different behaviors through plugins to create your own behaviors. Maybe you want a behavior of a thing that just floats up and down or in a weird ethereal way. You can create a component to do that, attach it to the entity, and then it attaches a new kind of behavior or movement to your object. And you can layer these things on top of each other too. I just made this a Havok rigid body. Maybe I want to attach a blob shadow to it. Maybe I want to add an LOD system to it. I can attach and layer these components on top of each other, and it just works. So another feature that I really like that empowers designers is our linking system. So for example, right here, I have this character here, and this is a trigger volume here. Right now, if I switch over to the link editor here, I can create a link from onEnter, which is this guy here. So when something enters it, I want something to happen. Well, if I click on this, an icon appears underneath this guy called the spawn event. So in the editor itself, I can link the onEnter event to the spawn event. And now it will automatically, when the character enters this, this guy's spawn event is going to get triggered, and then he's going to be spawned to the level. So very, very easily you can start. A designer has a lot of power and can do almost everything you need directly from inside of here. And we also have a really good particle system. So I can show you really quickly here how to create something like a... We also have a full template selection here, too. So we want to be able to show people the extent of the power here, but also give you something, a good place to start off of. So I'm going to select Magic Stardust because it looks amazing. And drag and drop this guy into here. And let me just move this up a little bit. And directly from in here, if I press play, you can see exactly what this particle system looks like. But we also have full constraints and collision systems that you can attach to this particle. So I can come up here, and we have different constraints. I'm actually going to pull in a sphere here. Let me go ahead and stop this. Select my sphere. Let me move this over into a more realistic area. So what I'm going to do here is actually connect these two together so that the particle system collides with this sphere here. Let me just get it into a place where it actually collides. Perfect. All right, so that what I'm going to do is use that same connection editor and connect this system to this particle system. And now, when I switch over to the particle system and play this, and select this so that I can move it around, you'll see that the particles actually now interact with the sphere. So that's just showing you two basic ways, spawning using the connection editor, using trigger volume events, or connecting things together like a constraint system with this sphere and the particle system.
Go ahead and show them asset transformation.
Sure. So I'll switch over to another scene that we have here, which is our block tower demo. And let me just switch over and play the game here real quick. So this is another sample that we provide. And I actually mentioned this a while ago. This entire sample was made with Lua. So I can, inside the editor, drag this around. It's basically a Jenga-style block tower game. And this was made entirely inside of Lua. So what I'm going to show you here, a second ago I showed you the asset browser. Another feature that we have is the asset transformation. And up here we have different profiles. So you can see we have a PC DirectX 9, an iOS, and an Android profile. And then right here I can actually preview that directly. So what I'm going to do is change this texture here, this anarchy texture, by coming over to my library and selecting block tower, double-clicking on this block TGA file. And what I'm going to do is you'll notice here we have transformations. And right now the template is set to custom, but I can also set it to compress no alpha or just use uncompressed textures for this particular texture. Maybe it's a skybox and I always want it to be uncompressed. So what I'm going to do is select custom and go down to Android. And for just Android, you notice this is very crisp right now. For Android, for whatever reason, I'm going to say downscale this by a power of 3. And then I'll say update transformation, and that actually transforms it for me. And then if I switch over to Android and then preview this, you'll see that the resolution for just this particular texture is a lot lower. And that's not all we have available to us. I showed you a second ago we had PC DirectX 9, Android, and iOS. All of these can be set in the Asset Profile Manager. So we can create a new one. Maybe we want to create a profile that's iOS ugly or something like that. It's very easy to come in and create new profiles, create new templates. For new devices, maybe I should create a Tizen profile, for example. So, yeah.
And real quick, just to show this actually working on a Tizen device, we have our demo. We've been showing it on the showroom floor. I'm sure many of you have seen our pod. I highly recommend, if you've not yet, to go check it out. We also have some rendering demos. Again, all completely running on the Tizen device.
So. Do we have 2 more minutes?
Yeah. So next, we're going to show you Project Anarchy and some of the tools used. Now, it's going to go through some demos. All these demos are going to be available on download with the SDK. We don't know. Oh, do we not have sound? All right, and one last thing to add there I don't think we covered is we're actually going to make the SDK available to download mid-June. So we want to take this time to go ahead and answer any questions you guys may have.
Hey, longtime fan. have you considered renaming Project Anarchy to Project Awesome? Serious question.
For that, you get a T-shirt. Thank you very much.
I don't know if this one's on, but is this going to work on the WebGL and the JavaScript-based stuff, or this is only to the native platforms of GLES?
So this is all for native platforms. So this is, we have an OpenGLES backend, and again, all of the stuff that we create is native code. So. Except for the Lua component, which, yeah.
So then just to clarify your business model on this, you'll sell professional services and consulting to support the mobile community, and then you'll charge if those people promote to kind of the console or the desktop platforms? Is that the gist of it?
Yes, that's our theory. You know, we're giving away iOS, Android for free, so if they have success in that marketplace and want to expand it, there's that option available. Also, kind of, there will be a marketplace available for developers that want to develop plugins or, as you saw, the component system. So we will be kind of charging a revenue base off whatever they're charging for other developers to use it.
Or like for things like assets, and is there going to be kind of
Yes, there will be assets and there will be actual plugin extensions.
So. Thank you very much.
No problem. You had a question?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, perfect. Sorry.
Can you use the microphone, please? Sorry.
Yeah.
Are there any plans to support Ubuntu Touch?
Multi-touch?
Ubuntu touch?
Currently, it depends. That's the kind of feedback that we want from people. Currently, any platform that's exciting, this is why we're supporting Kaizen as well, because it's an exciting new platform, and we think a lot of people are going to be using it. If we get feedback from the community that says, hey, we need to have Ubuntu touch, we will definitely respond to that feedback and deploy it to new platforms. So that's the kind of feedback that we want to hear from the community, for sure.
When's Havoc Destruction and Cloth coming to mobile?
So that's a really good question. We actually support Havoc Destruction and Havoc Cloth on mobile already, but the package that we're giving to people for free with Project Anarchy doesn't include that. And the reason is really that, from our perspective, current mobile platforms can't really take full advantage of Cloth and Destruction. Like, we're already very performant with our other products, but we think that with the products that we are providing, people are going to be being able to create really, really amazing content already. So it's already available, and that's another thing that if you wanted to add to your game, you could come talk to us and, yeah.
Right, but I mean, just to emphasize that mobile hardware is not quite up there to use that technology yet.
Can I use the Lua scripting to the real commercial game, or just for the scripting or prototyping?
Yeah, so Lua is obviously an interpreted language, so it comes at some performance cost. But for simple games like the Block Tower game that you saw, completely doable. You can ship a game with Lua, no problem. In fact, there's a lot of AAA games and a lot of mobile games that have been created completely with Lua. So that's a very viable option. Really what we're saying is use Lua if you can, do the prototyping, and then, you know, if you run into performance problems because you have a lot of Lua, then you can start switching over and using C++. But we're not hindering you from shipping or using Lua at all. We fully encourage you to do that.
And a note on top of that is that Block Tower you saw was completely done with Lua. So we're shipping that as an example as well.
What is the most advantage when I use it instead of Unity 3D or Mamale?
So I think the question is whether or not, what is the biggest advantage compared to Unity 3D or Marmalade? So what we're providing is a very, very flexible component-based system that is C++, and I consider that probably the most advantageous reason. So if you have low-level performance, low-level hardware access that you want on particular platforms, it's very easy to do that because we already provide C++. We're already down to the level. And you can extend it or expand it however you want. So we're very, very extensible in that sense.
And another note on top of that is we don't have any revenue caps. So we don't care how much money you make. We don't have any kind of hidden language behind that. And we also, Project Anarchy is only one upgrade. I mean, it's free. So there's no upgrade pass to different editors to unlock certain things. Yes, there is the cloth or destruction element, but that's a specific case for that. So,
you guys talk, if you prototype something in Lua, how easy is it to translate that code to C?
Well, I mean, it's not an automatic translation. So, I mean, there's definitely some thinking that goes on there. But, I mean, you can kind of think of when you create a Lua component. So when you attach Lua scripts onto entities, it's a Lua component that you add on top of it. And then you handle callbacks, things like on enter scene and stuff like that. So conceptually, those ideas apply directly to C++. The code style is totally different, obviously. But, I mean, you can do a basically one-to-one. I need to handle this event in this component. I need to do this in the on tick function. So there is a one-to-one in that aspect. Okay. So it'll take some time, but, I mean, it's a relatively easy mental game.
So the Lua is just a wrapper around the C++.
Yeah, so we actually provide – so if you create a new component, for example, and you want to be able to access your component that you created in C++ inside of Lua, we provide an interface for doing that too. We use Swig, so it's relatively easy for you to – write your C++ and then use Swig to make it available via Lua.
Cool. All right, thanks.
Mm-hmm. If I want to use device hardware like the sensors or maybe the camera in particular, mm-hmm. Do I need a component or plugin for that?
Yeah, I mean, we provide an extensive set of things for you to access, but in particular cases where, you know, you might have a camera and maybe it's a very device-specific thing, usually the vendor is going to have an API for you to access that. And all you would really need to do is link in the correct library, use the correct header file, and then you can access whatever the hardware vendor provides for you. So obviously, like, we try to abstract away as much of the pain as possible. So for things like, you know, accelerometer or maybe input, like multi-touch input, we do provide like a layer between that so you don't have to worry about the device. But if you're working with a cutting edge new device or something like that, then yeah, you'll probably need to write a component to handle that.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hello, this is a repeat of the Ubuntu question. Mm-hmm. What about Firefox OS and Yola?
What was the last one?
Yola or Hoya or
J. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, yeah. So yeah, it's kind of the same answer that I gave before. I mean, if we see a lot of the community going, this is where it's at, this is what we need, then we're going to respond to that feedback and port it to whatever platforms are available. Right. Yeah. But those, we have definitely thought about that before. And in previous years when we just had Vision, we actually had a web Vision as well that we had for just the web. But our clients, none of our clients really were using it. And so it was one of those things where we were maintaining something that none of our clients really wanted. So now we're opening it up to a more mass market, so maybe more indie developers. So maybe that's going to be something that we revisit. Like if we get a lot of feedback like you guys are giving us and we say, well, this is something we need to do, then we'll definitely take a good hard look and see if that's something we want to do.
So you said integrating third-party libraries. Basically, we just link in the headers and then we have direct native access to anything else. So like the Leap Motion Controller, we could just put something like that directly into Project Anarchy?
Right. So just to repeat the question a little bit, it's, you know, if you have some third-party tool and you want to be able to take advantage of that, yes, then you would need to create a component or maybe a new entity type, basically a plugin. And through the marketplace, we're hoping that people who create new devices or new third-party middleware, we're actually working with a lot of middleware companies too. Our system is such that it's relatively easy, and we want to be able to have a marketplace so that middleware providers can say, well, I created this cool, new, awesome thing. They create a component or an entity, a plugin, for Project Anarchy and provide it to the community so that they can get, well, now I have this, give it to everybody.
Okay, thanks for your amazing report. I want to know, the Tizen is a definite platform with a definite conventions, and when you create even native project, then mm-hmm. there are some entry point, something else, mm-hmm. frames and so on. Can you give a basic ideas how to fit your engine to the native project of Tizen?
So we provide, so when we release these, we actually provide project files. So for iOS, for example, we have an Xcode project file. And for Android, we actually provide integration with Visual Studio. And we actually intend on having full debugging for Android inside of Visual Studio. So we provide a solution file, a project file for each of those. And then we have the back end, so kind of wrappers around those entry points. And then we hook into that. So you can override the main render engine loop, for example. But we provide hooks so that if you don't want to do that, we provide the hooks into it, and then you create the meat of it. So you handle, like, the update loop, the game update loop, or the render engine loop, and that sort of thing. Does that answer your question?
Okay. All right. And I think that's all the time we have for questions, unfortunately. Be sure to rate us highly, hopefully. And if you have any more questions, you can email info@projectanarchy.com. We strongly recommend, if you are interested, going to projectanarchy.com and signing up for a newsletter. We also have a Facebook and a Twitter feed that we update quite frequently with info and where we'll be showing Project Anarchy and more of it.
And thank you. And come by the pod and check out our demos.
That too.
Thank you.
Thank you.